You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You're listening to the North of 49 Soccer Podcast. Interviews, analysis, and discussion about Canadian soccer with hosts Chris Williams and Steve Watcher. All right, here we are back. It's episode 7 of the North of 49 Podcast. And my name is Steve Watcher, and here I am with my co-host, Chris Williams. Chris, how are you doing? And I'm wondering, how did you like the Clásico with Real Madrid and Barcelona on the weekend?
Yeah, I'm still kind of calmed down from that match. What a match that was, with Cristiano Ronaldo sort of dictating to the fans that he's running the show. I think I thought that was a great match, for all fans around the world. So, yeah, very exciting to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're a Canadian soccer podcast here, but I thought that would be a good segue in to Toronto FC's last game. And some people might find that strange, seeing that, you know, it wasn't exactly a classic and didn't have the greatest defending on TFC's part. And, you know, the team lost a record sixth game in a row in the MLS. But outside of the loss, I thought it was a really entertaining game. You know, it's just... you know, back and forth, TFC created some chances, some nice goals, some defensive breakdowns. But, you know, if TFC hadn't been on such a bad losing streak, you know, that was one that I wouldn't mind just kicking back and watching and, you know, enjoying for the good things and the bad things. You know, what did you make out of the game?
Yeah, I really feel for TFC in that match. I think that game had just about everything, as you mentioned, in it. You know, it had the giveaways, the missed scoring chances, the great goals, and the two lightning rods up front with Niarco and Oduro up front for Chicago, probably the fastest players in the MLS. And TSC didn't handle them quite well, or as they should have. So, but no, I thought it was an exciting game from the scoreline standpoint in terms of the goals, the amount of goals that were scored. I think if you're a fan watching, that's what you want to see. Just you want your side to be on the winning end of things. So I liked what I saw in terms of that, in terms of fan excitement. And I'm sure the fans will want TFC to continue giving an effort, but again, to come up with a win instead of a loss.
Now, we'll talk a little bit about the TFC situation as a whole in a few minutes, but I wanted to key in on the three goals allowed. You know, definitely three big mistakes, and, you know, I'm just wondering about that. There's been a lot of chatter on those goals. Obviously, the first one by Frings was uncharacteristic, and, you know, are the players accountable, you know, with those types of mistakes? Are Aaron Vinter and the coaching staff, do they have any accountability that, you know, once again, another goal off of a set piece and whatnot? You know, what's going on with the back line there? I do have to say that, as you mentioned, those two extremely quick strikers from Chicago, that I was a little surprised that Aaron Vinter went with a three-man back line consisting of one player who's played one game after being out for a year with an ACL injury, and another player as experienced as he is, who was coming back from a hamstring injury and hadn't played in about a month, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a few things there. I think everybody has to be held accountable just for the mistakes. And whenever, you know, you do something positive or negative, you hold yourself accountable. You know, in that giveaway there with Frings, I think that Kostic might have wanted to push the defense up, seeing who his back line was starting to start the game. So to push the back line up and to really get a kick down the field and get his side, you know, over the halfway line, I think that's the first decision that went wrong for TFC there. And obviously, Frings will hold up his hand and say, you know what, I gave away the ball, despite maybe the lack of communication or the decision to actually start from the back on the ground there. But Frings will hold up his hand and definitely say, you know, I'm accountable, I'm responsible, I gave the ball away, and my team, you know, are 1-0 down because of my mistakes. So, yeah, I think, I mean, despite the system, Steve, I think, you know, mistakes, those are mental errors, and once those mistakes are eliminated, then TFC can start on the right foot. But, I mean, the system, yeah, you have to look at the players who you're implementing in a system so they play three at the back. Maybe not the smartest idea when you're playing against a front man attack of Oduro and Niarco. Again, Steve, those players are lightning quick, and as we saw in many of the goals, you know, or even if the chances that Chicago missed, you know, just how fast those players can be. But, Aaron Vinter can take some blame as well. We'll put some blame on him just because you know, he employed that system at the back. I think if he went with a straight four, flat back four at the back, you know, I think he would have handled the pacey players up front. So, yeah, I would look at the players. I would look at Aaron Vinter and the coaching staff, and more work needs to be done on the training ground. So hopefully they get it right eventually in the next game and the next few matches leading into, well, the Canadian Championship's coming up soon, so they don't have that much time. So hopefully they get it right in the next match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that mistake by Torsten Frings proves that, you know, pretty much any player can make a mistake, no matter whether you're one of the, you know, I don't know, top 1% of players in the entire world. You're still going to make a mistake every now and then. You know, outside of the mistake, it was certainly good and exciting to see him back. And, you know, he started playing as a defender, and then, you know, the formation shifted as the game went along, and then he moved into the midfield. And then at a late part in the game, I guess when TFC was pushing for a tying goal, he even looked to be, you know, up near the top, almost in a forward position. I did think that when he moved further up the field, the TFC attack didn't look quite so predictable, and, you know, had something different, you know, coming from that central part of the midfield. You know, what are your thoughts now, given what you've seen? Does TFC still need him on the back line, or do they need his creativity in the midfield?
I think Torsten Frings should be playing as a center back. I think he should be employed in midfield. I also think Julian de Guzman, Terry Dunfield, they should all be a part of that midfield and get Silva in there as well. I think you need that creativity, and you have to use your depth as best you can. Maybe all players can't play at once at the same time, but I think they need, TFC cannot afford to leave Torsten Frings way at the back. Yes, he has great delivery into, you know, service into the front man, into the box, on set pieces, but I think TFC needs to find a way, find a center back that's going to do the job. Maybe Daniel Henry is going to come in, you know, as a youngster, come in and get some game time and playing experience. He has the athleticism to do it, so I think they have to find a way to put in place Torsten Frings and maybe alongside Julian de Guzman or Terry Dunfield, because they need his creativity and his experience.
One positive for TFC in that match was the performance of Reggie Lamb, who scored his first two MLS goals. And I believe TFC, for a very short period of time, actually had their first lead of the season as well. What are your early thoughts on Reggie Lamb? And, you know, what did you make of those goals that he scored?
Yeah, I think this was the first game that I saw Reggie Lamb play with a bit of confidence. You know, in the previous matches, when he was getting into the match as a sub, or even starting, he didn't look so hot, as they say. He looked a little bit lukewarm and, you know, just finding his feet. Maybe just... you know, finding his way now in North America. So, but no, you can definitely tell from his first touch of the match, his confidence was there, and I could just see, you know, him, you know, his effort, you know, fighting for loose balls, for second balls, and I think he had a great start to the match. I don't want to be too critical of him, you know, with the mistake in terms of the set piece that he let his man go, but I think the jury's still out. I think he needs to continue giving that effort off the ball. And if he continues to do that, you know, when he's on the ball, confidence will always flow, and he'll be an asset to TFC, especially with his pace. I mean, same type of player as Ryan Johnson. If they get these types of players in attacking positions, facing the goal, and you know, just running at defenders, they'll be successful.
With the positive attributes that that Reggie Lamb has shown thus far, it does add to the depth of TFC, and I'm wondering, you know, how important is it to have both him and Nick Soelsma as an option in order to push them both, not only to, you know, bring their best week after week, but also to have them both conforming to their defensive responsibilities as well?
Yeah, I think when you have players like that and they're ticking on all cylinders and you know, their confidence is high, and you know, whether they're coming off the bench or they're starting the match, I think once their confidence is at a high level and they're training every day and, you know, injury-free, I think that's what TFC needs right now currently. They need depth. They need players who can affect change in the match and create scoring chances. And Soelsma's an interesting player. I mean, he doesn't look like a pacey player, but, I mean, he's very dynamic. And, you know, maybe Aaron Vinter has to put them on off wing. Maybe Soelsma plays on the left and gives Joel Platz a rest. I'm not too sure. That's for Aaron Vinter to decide. But I think he has some options with those types of players.
Another thing that a team usually needs a little bit of when they're struggling is a little bit of luck. And, you know, some people are pointing to a call that didn't go TFC's way in the Chicago match. Former TFC defender at a crucial point in that match, You know, was that a missed penalty call on the ref, or you know, and our TFC not getting the breaks, or was that, would that have been too much, too cruel to have given Gargan a penalty call on that?
Yeah, point? I think it's a little too cruel to give Gargan a call on that. I mean, I barely even remember that, Steven. Maybe it's just because I think TFC had other chances to, you know, to win the match. They don't need a penalty call. Obviously, when things are going your way, you look for those little things. So, but I would leave that call alone and just, you know, hope that we don't have to depend on a ref's missed call or even a call for TFC. And just because I really believe that TFC have the ability and the quality to push through those barriers and actually win matches, so, or at least get a point, especially at home.
So after that match, obviously there was some tenseness in the dressing room and a lot of questions and fingers being pointed by the press towards Aaron Vinter. I'd like to get your thoughts on the situation as a whole, the losing streak as a whole. How much of this is a slump, and how much of this is, you know, a failure that needs to be attributed to either Aaron Vinter or even the players themselves?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, the accountability has to, you know, lie with everybody there involved. And what I really, really want to bring up is, and I've been critical of TFC, MLSE's executives, but I just feel that, you know, obviously MLSE is a powerhouse in terms of their empire. I mean, what a great success they have been off the field, you know, away from their sporting events. But, you know, looking back, they hired Jurgen Klinsmann as a consultant, and what he did was he displayed, I mean, he had Aaron Vinter on a platter for them, and they invited him in, and they signed him up. And I think that when you look at that type of signing, and Aaron Vinter's footballing pedigree is superb, world-class. I mean, if we look at his pedigree, where he's played, you know, the background that he has in football, I mean, it's phenomenal. However, his coaching pedigree isn't there. And I think that's what TFC needed to do. They needed to find a coach that knew the league, knew the MLS, knew the type of players, the type of league that it is. Because it is a competitive league, and it is, you know, developing into a top league around the world. I mean, make no mistake, when Liverpool comes over here and plays TFC, or Real Madrid comes over and plays, you know, Seattle and different teams here in the MLS, it's a competition, it's a competitive game. And I think that TFC's mistake was to, you know, find a coach that didn't have that experience within the league. And that's where I find the accountability needs to start. You know, people need to start pointing fingers at the MLSE, yes. But also Aaron Vinter, he needs to go back to the training ground. He needs to work with his players, and because mistakes keep happening, and the same mistakes. And Steve, I know you've spoken about, you know, previous podcasts with former guests about the center back problem with TFC. And if that problem keeps coming up, then there's an issue. They need to resolve that. They need to find the players that are right for the position and players that are going to last, you know, throughout the season and have longevity and the legs to do so. So I just believe that it's an immature selection for the MLSE execs. I think that Aaron Vinter, he doesn't know the league, so his inexperience shows. And for also those players, some of these players are playing in Champions League, you know, football, you know, a match per week, two matches per week. It's the most football they've ever played, and you're asking them to do a lot. And I just think it's a circle, it's a vicious cycle, and hopefully at some point it's going to end.
It's interesting that you bring up Jurgen Klinsmann. I haven't heard him mention much, you know, over the last couple of weeks, you know, how TFC hasn't started the way that that most people would have hoped. You know, I'm wondering, is there, if this continues and it's shown that it's not working, you know, does Jurgen Klinsmann have to take a little bit of the blame here? He came in here as sort of, you know, a world expert in football, and he was going to, you know, provide the knowledge to turn around this franchise. I've always enjoyed watching Jurgen Klinsmann when he was a player, and you know, you can't help but respect what he achieved at both the club level and with the German national team. But I sometimes wonder if maybe he'd been in the States a little bit too long, and he's a little bit more flaky California than pragmatic and you know, engineering Germany or anything like that. There were the rumors that you know, he had been tossed out of Bayern Munich for unconventional methods and having Buddhas in the dressing room and whatnot. So, you know, what do you think about Jurgen Klinsmann? He's obviously off coaching the U.S. national team now. You know, does he have to take any blame if this continues?
Well, I have an idea, Steve. Why don't we go and ask Jurgen Klinsmann on June 3rd when he comes to Canada to play against the Canadian national team? I think that, you know, we can blame Jurgen Klinsmann. Yes, we can. But again, who hired him? MLSE did. And I think, you know, looking at that, he was a consultant. He came in with good intentions, supposedly, and wanted to help the organization. They looked to, you know, as you mentioned, Jurgen Klinsmann's pedigree, his background in football, world football is, I mean, top class. I mean, why not? You know, why not him? But then when I look at it, I almost think, you know, the Americans, you know, they're almost smiling at us, you know, from below there, saying, you know, our U.S., you know, our World Cup coach, you know, hired one of your MLS franchises, you know, coaches there. He was on that consulting board, that advisory board. I just think it's a little bit strange. I don't like it. I mean, I think there shouldn't be anybody blaming Jurgen Klinsmann, because he just gave his opinion, and it just shows the inexperience in soccer that the MLSE has, I believe, in terms of a technical decision. They pushed the button. They made that technical decision to hire Inventor. And don't forget, Paul Mariner's on board as well. So, I mean, he's behind the scenes there, but maybe he has to take some accountability as well. I'm not too sure of his exact role, how much decision-making he actually has, you know, with the club, but maybe he should be blamed as well for the poor start and for the players that haven't panned out for TFC.
I guess it's important to note that TFC probably would not have been able to sign Torsten Frings without Jurgen Klinsmann being involved either. So, you know, I guess we're just going to have to watch how things go in the coming weeks. But that does bring up another question. Obviously, the man on the hot seat right now is Aaron Winter. Chris, you know, what do you think? Can he turn this around?
Yeah, I really feel for him because, you know, growing up watching him as a player, I mean, what a hard-nosed, strong player he was. And I see him in the post-game comments and post-game press conference, and he really is holding back his words. I think sometimes he slips out and says, you know, the player's just not good enough. He doesn't allude to who he's speaking about. He just says, you know, we're just not good enough. And he tries to put the blame back on himself. But I know deep down, because it is his real, you know, first real coaching experience at the pro level, I believe, and, you know, dealing with players like Torsten Frings, Julian de Guzman, Kluivermans. I mean, maybe it's his first real chance of, you know, really rolling up his sleeves and saying, you know, he can. I just think that the hole that's been drilled into the ground, you know, from the inception of the MLS by the MLSC and by their hiring, you know, in the past, I just think that it's a hole that he can't get out of. And I mean, it's a shame just because, again, his pedigree is world-class, but TFC deserves much better than what they're getting. And if he doesn't find a way soon, you know, he will be, you know, looking, he'll be on the outs, and maybe he'll be looking up, because that's where he'll be going. I'll assume, you know, his position as a technical director, I think that's his title with the club as well. So, I mean, who knows? Hopefully he can turn it around. Hopefully they can get a victory in the next match. But only he knows. He knows if he has control of that locker room, and hopefully right now he does. Hopefully the players are you know, going to band together and stick together, because that's the only way they're going to come out of it. If the players stick together, they'll come out of it in some way. I don't know if they'll have a winning season and they'll make the playoffs, but as long as the players stick together, they'll eventually dig themselves out of that hole.
Okay, well, as always, TFC is a story to watch. One final note from that match was the opposition, and the Chicago Fire came to town with a new player on their roster, one of Torsten Frings' old German national team teammates, Arne Friedrich. Another fantastic player, not a celebrity or flashy player on the Beckham or Henry level, but you know, just a really good player who's also done a lot in the league, and a player who's going to help Chicago a lot. What does it mean for the MLS that these players keep coming over, and that a player of Friedrich's quality is, you know, just adding to the quality of the league as a whole?
Yeah, it's interesting. I find it very, very appealing that the league actually looks to these players, and even from the standpoint of, no, he's not a flashy type player in terms of David Beckham. He doesn't bring all the endorsements and, you know, all the fanfare that Beckham brought over, but he's a solid player that's very effective. And I think more and more teams are starting to do so with their designated players. And, you know, they're not looking to the flash. They're looking towards the results. And I think that, you know, a player like Friedrich, that's exactly what teams should be doing. They should be looking for a bit of both. Obviously, they want to have someone who can appeal to fans and have that name. But they're definitely looking for results. And I think Friedrich does that for the Chicago Fire, and he does it quietly. So he has a definite impact. But as you can see with Torsten Frings, it's good for the league. I think they'll continue to do so, and the league's growing, and more players are going to come over, as we'll find out and as we'll see as the months go on and the years go on. So I think it's fantastic.
Okay, well, in addition to bringing over players from Europe and you know, all around the world, literally, to improve the quality of the MLS, the other big story in terms of improving the quality of play in the league is the advent of MLS academies and the development of homegrown players, you know, the Breck Shays and Ashton Morgans, who are becoming the next great players, not only for MLS clubs, but also for, you know, national teams in both the United States and Canada. And that brings us to our interview this week, which is with another fantastic homegrown player and young Canadian talent who I believe we're going to see a lot of great things from in the future. Donnell Henry. So our interview this week is with Donnell Henry of Toronto FC, the first player ever signed to a professional contract from the TFC Academy. So here's Donnell Henry talking to us on the North 49 podcast.
Donnell, at 18 years old, you're a part of the generation that has at least partially grown up with Toronto FC, having taken its place as the most important professional soccer entity in your hometown. When did Toronto FC become a serious option for you, and did you follow the team closely when it launched in 2007?
I didn't watch. I knew about TFC, but I didn't really watch any games until I was involved with the club during the academy time. And I started to take TFC serious after being with the academy, after being cut from the provincial team, and being the professional, being so close, being in the change room beside us. I'm like, wow, I can really step in there, and that's when I said I want to live this life.
Donnell, Toronto is such a multicultural city, and it seems like you talk to every player, they have different influences and different favorite players and different leagues that they followed when they were growing up. I'm wondering, who was your biggest influence growing up on the path to becoming a professional football player, and how did you end up as a center back?
Starting with my favorite player, still my favorite player, and he doesn't even play my position, is Ricardo Kaká. I grew up liking Kaká, wearing the same numbers and number 22, and AC Milan being the theme of my room and my favorite club at the time. I just like Kaká because he's a Christian guy, and just the way he played, very simple, very influential on his team. And I started as a defensive midfielder, or sometimes playing striker with my club in Brampton. And after my first year playing with Brampton Bullets, I was quickly transformed into a sweeper center back.
Danielle, central defense is a challenging position to play for young players. Is there anything currently you feel needs to improve, or you feel with experience improvement will come naturally?
Yeah, you know what, definitely with minutes, I think that the more comfort level and the comfort zone for me playing with the team will be a lot better. But yeah, you know what, as a footballer, you can never be too technically sound. And I think the more you work on your foot skills and your passing range, and just being a leader in the back and just being very vocal, will help my play for sure.
Donnell, you're famous for being the first player from the TFC Academy to sign a professional contract and move up to the senior team. Was playing for TFC always the end goal for you, or did you seriously consider other options at any point?
I can start at home, where I have my family, I have my friends, everyone around me for the support. And no, I definitely see myself hopefully trying to move and play at the top level of soccer. I think TFC is great to start with, but at the end of the day, I want to try and have a good soccer career, a good, long, and successful soccer career. So definitely I use this as a starting point, and who knows what I'm capable of doing.
Danielle, earlier you mentioned about the provincial team being released from that program at one point, and now you've made 5 appearances with Canada's under 20 national team and played 3 times for the Canadian Olympic team, the under 23 level. As a young player, what have you learned and gained from your experiences competing now at the international level?
You know what, I love it because it's so much more passionate and more you know, it's just one of those games, you know, you're fighting for your country, and as the other team is doing to try and represent their country. And these games are really important for exposure. And I think that for especially the U23s this year, we really showed that the Canadians are growing in the game, and that we are here and not to be forgotten. So I think that, you know what, especially representing my country, I love it, and I want to continue repping it. Hopefully I can move on to the men's team in the, further down the line.
Daniel, that was my next question. Like many of Canada's next generation, you did play very well at the recent CONCACAF Olympic qualifying tournament in the States. And now that you've represented Canada at the Olympic team level, you know, do you see yourself progressing to the national team in the near future, or is that a goal that still might be something that you're going to achieve down the road?
When I'm in the team, I just hope I make it eventually. You know, like coming into this year, I had a goal of trying to qualify for the with the U20s, and that was my main focus. And I remember someone asked me the question, have I been called into U23 camp, and I said no. You know, I haven't been called, but I'd be really optimistic in going and playing and hopefully training with the U23 teams. And you know what, it happened. I played minutes, and I was really happy that I could represent my country at another level. So U20, U23 men's team, I'm really want to play for as much as I can and get as much exposure as I can.
Daniel, as a former player, I played against TFC and never actually played for the club, but you know, from a fan's perspective and the experience that I see from afar, you know, what is it really like playing and actually being involved with TFC on all fronts, you know, from a fan appreciation side, team culture, and being a role model for other young players?
Yeah, you know what, I think the fans in Toronto are exceptionally, like, they're amazing, because although right now we're not having a great season, we haven't been that bad, but I think that they've sticked behind us and they want to see us get into it, and they've been really supportive. For the young guys out there, I try my best, especially with the academy guys and guys back home who I see on a daily basis in my community. I just try to keep motivating them and tell them that, you know what, they just need to keep training hard and staying consistent, and it has to be a decision that they make, and they have to put the effort in the end. So the kids in the community, fans, people in the city, I just want to appreciate them for their hard work, and because me being a role model to the young guys, especially in my community, they do see me as just a normal person and just living my dream. And they see how I'm not as far off. It's just my commitment and my hard work. So they know that it's definitely possible.
Daniel, your TFC teammate and team captain, Torsten Frings, has won Bundesliga championships and, you know, has played in huge games. He's been a runner-up and a third-place finisher at two World Cups with the German national team. As a young player, what's it like playing with a player that has Torsten's experience, and what have you learned from playing and training with him?
Well, Torsten, as you can say, he's a successful footballer. You know, he's done it all, played in top competitions, won top competitions, and Torsten, just watching him and the way he moves, he's a high-caliber player, and just how calm he is, and just taking the things that he does, the simple things, and those are the things that make him different from everybody else. You know, he's a hard worker. The older guys, you can't really tell, because he still plays and wants to fight and still wants to, you know, he wants to put forth all of his effort. And he says, you know what, you're only going to tell you the mental thing. You're not tired of playing, and you can keep going. And just the way he plays, and just, he doesn't have to even be a verbal leader. Just you appreciate all of his movements and the way he acts on and off the field.
Well, clearly, Daniel, you've learned from Torsten's experience, and that's a great asset to have on the team, and to go around the change room to have someone to look to, especially as a young player. Since you've made, you know, your two first team appearances thus far, what has Aaron Winter told you that you need to do in order to earn your chances and consistently earn some playing time going forward in the season?
No, I think there hasn't been much verbal communication about that. It's just, he's just telling me, you know, I have a bright future. I just need to keep doing the things like growing as a player, you know, getting in the gym and making sure I'm doing stuff off the pitch to make sure that I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm ready to get in. And you know what, I'm very young, so I just had to take my chances when I get them. So I know playing time will come eventually. I just want to make sure that when it comes, I'm ready. And I just keep developing, keep growing.
Daniel, you played your first full season with TFC when Preki was the head coach of the team, and he favored a very defensive, almost MLS standard 4-4-2 approach. However, in 2011, Dutchman Aaron Winter took over at TFC as head coach and technical director. I'm wondering, has it been a challenge as a young central defender to adjust to the Dutch style, in particular making that adjustment as a center back?
Yeah, you know, I came in as basically at the ending of the year, again signed late into the season. So I've been with Preki for not as long as most people think I was, but definitely I respect both coaches, but I like the way that it's not, yes, we play to attack more, but we just want to embrace playing football. And at the beginning of the era of Coach Aaron Winter and Bob de Klerk, you know, it took time to get into the, you know, the formations and the movements and what we have to do. But right now I feel comfortable and I like the position of formation and the position I'm playing. So I think that we're playing a perfectly fine formation.
Daniil, one of your early standout performances with TFC came in a friendly against English side Bolton Wanderers, in which you played 77 minutes and earned Man of the Match honors. I'm sure that was a great feeling. It has just been announced that Toronto will play a huge, you know, a high-profile friendly against Liverpool this summer. What are your thoughts on the Liverpool match, and how important are those games in terms of the opportunity that they provide for young players on the team?
Oh, definitely, I think these are the games that you have to look forward to playing. You get to face a great team in one of the top football, in one of the top countries in the world. I think that this is where I got my opportunity, and I showed a lot of people that I'm capable of making it to the next level. And from that game on, after that game, I was training with the first team. Not on the contract yet, but training with the first team of Toronto on a daily basis. And I think that the more young guys that get a chance that are ready to make that step could definitely make a good reputation on themselves. So hopefully we get a lot of young guys in and we show ourselves well.
That was Daniil Henry of Toronto FC. So, Chris, moving on, the Montreal Impact were off on the weekend, so hasn't been much news coming out of Quebec, but the Vancouver Whitecaps were back in action on the weekend and got back into the win column with a 1-0 win over FC Dallas at home on the weekend. Camilo scored early, and the back line was outstanding as the team earned a clean sheet following those two straight losses in which they conceded a total of 6 goals. Chris, do you think Vancouver's back on track? And tactically, what did the Whitecaps do right that enabled them to shut out a powerful FC Dallas offense?
Yeah, you asked there the question if they're back on track. I think that they are. Last year, they would have lost that match probably, even though they were up a goal. They probably would have given away a late goal, an equalizing goal, and then, you know, an extra time, probably they would have, you know, made a mistake on a set piece, and they would have lost the point. So, yeah, I think they are back on track, and I think Martin Rennie, again, he's employed, you know, a system there. And really, you know, we always talk about systems, Steve, but I think what he has, Martin Rennie has, is quality in every position, and he has a lot of depth. And fortunately for him, it works. He should probably send some depth over to the TFC, because what I see there is, you know, Eric Hassley, Kimiento, these players weren't playing, and I was just thinking, you know, how are they going to do, you know, in the attack? But what I saw was a solid, firm performance by the central midfield area. And I'm sure if you watched the match, you saw Gershon Kofi. He was everywhere, you know, on the field. I mean, he was making tackles, he was dribbling, he was playing long balls. He was in places that he shouldn't have been in. And I just find that he was the man of the match for me. I mean, he's a strong player, and I think that really works. The system suits him, you know, playing that central role. And Davidson, I really like Davidson in that role as well, just backing up Gershon Kofi. And a player that I did briefly play with, which is Omar Salgado, had his debut there in terms of the start of the season. And I think he's come a long way. I think that they were mentioning that he's dropped a few pounds, he's put on some muscle, and now, you know, he's become more fit and ready to compete at that level, game in, game out. And it showed. He had a good performance, a solid performance. And I think that's what Vancouver needs, to have those solid performances, you know, game in, game out. And again, they have the quality to do so. So I think they are back in business. And hopefully, you know, look, Eric Hassley's on the bench. And, you know, I mean, God forbid, if he comes in and scores a few goals, I mean, and he starts to fire on all cylinders, then Vancouver will be looking towards the playoffs down the road.
Yeah, I think, you know, they deserve real credit for the depth they've built there. You look at every position, it looks like they're several men deep. Obviously, that's good for competition. It's good for match congestion and just for, you know, solid performance as a whole. They also have another big name player still to come in the summer, already announced to add to that midfield. So they look to be in good shape. Are they are they in the pole position as the favorite for the Canadian Championship now?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, again, I think each Canadian team's going to go in there. Even Edmonton, looking at it, it's not a, you know, a league game. It's a one off, so they're going to play to win. And but I would say Vancouver is the front runners to win that. I would be picking them. Definitely. They just look, in terms of their depth, they have enough to go around to win a game. They have match winners on the bench, and whenever you have that, then you should really be going with those that team to win. I mean, a player that we've mentioned, Lee, who's the right back, I really liked him in the Vancouver game, against Dallas, sorry. You know, he handled Breck Shea quite nicely, and he was getting up and down that line. And when you have a player like him, at that age, and I sort of mentioned his age, but I mean, at 35, maybe he's turning 36 soon, you know, he's still moving up and down that line. And when you have a player like that doing that game in, game out, I mean, what a feat that is. So I would look for Vancouver to win the Canadian Championship. And I guess you can have it on record now, Steve. I do pick Vancouver to win the Canadian Championship.
It's interesting that you bring up Breck Shea again. Obviously, Dallas has played all of the Canadian teams now. But it's interesting that... you know, an old, you know, veteran player like young Pio Lee was one weight player who shut him down. And another one was our interview subject this week. I think Donnell Henry, a young athletic Canadian player, also shut him down in the Champions League last year. So it just shows that there are different ways to defend those big name players. Vancouver's next match will be on the road against the Columbus Crew. And the Crew have had their way with Canadian opposition thus far, beating Montreal and Toronto already this season, and I think even with some of their supporters going online and asking if they can play Canadian teams in every game. So I'm wondering, how big a test is this away match for Vancouver, given that they're, you know, they're playing on the road against one of the perennial top teams in the Eastern Conference with a solid defense and you know, a good MLS quality coach?
Yeah, I do look at the coach as a quality coach there. You know, Columbus is a strange team for me just because I don't think they have always have the star-studded lineup that you would look, you know, in terms of the New Yorks and even Vancouver. I mean, you just look at Vancouver and New York there alone. I mean, the players, I think Columbus, you know, when you look at their lineup, you think, well, how are they actually going to win this match? But they're very solid, very tactically disciplined in their system, and that's going to be a tough challenge for Vancouver. But I still think that if Vancouver's disciplined enough with their back line and specifically on their set pieces, I find that Vancouver just has a lapse in maybe constant concentration, even when they were playing Dallas. If they get those things right on the road, then I think they can go into Columbus because they do have those match winners, as I mentioned earlier, with Hasley, Camilo, and Latou there. So they have the match winners to do that and to get a point and maybe even pull out a victory. I shouldn't say pull out. I think they can go there and dominate, and if they score on their chances, I think that Columbus could be in trouble and probably face one of their you know, first or second defeats at home. So I would pick Vancouver there to come away with a point at least on the road in Columbus.
The Vancouver Whitecaps also made a couple of important announcements this week. Announcing on Tuesday that, with the first piece of news, that Richmond, BC native and residency striker Caleb Clark has been added to the club's Major League Soccer roster as a homegrown player. Interesting, another striker. I tend to, at this point, wonder if maybe they got some advice from someone on Man City who they played last year in a friendly on the importance of signing, you know, 8, 9, 10 strikers. You know, but seriously, you know, adding quality is always a good thing. And Clark, it looks like an interesting player, a Canadian U-20 international, scored 20 goals in 19 matches in the 2011-12 USSDA season. And he's another homegrown player, you know, adding some more Canadian content to the roster. Chris, what do you know about Caleb Clark, and what do you think of the signing?
Yeah, I know Caleb not too well, but I've trained with him and with my time in Vancouver. talented young lad, and I think that, you know, he has done well in the Academy League, as you mentioned there. So I think, you know, because of his performance there, I think the Whitecaps can ignore that, and it's a good thing. I have to look at this from two different perspectives. It's a good thing that the Whitecaps don't ignore a Canadian talent like that and don't let him fall by the wayside. You know, they actually guide him into the first team. It's going to be definitely going to be tough, Steve, as you mentioned there, with the strikers that they have in play. It's going to be tough, but, I mean, stranger things have happened. You can find him in a lineup, and he can come in and have an impact, an immediate impact, especially with his attributes, I mean, his size and his pace. So, yeah, Caleb Clark, I'll look for him to do quite well. He's a hardworking lad, and that's what you'll get from Canadians as a whole. So, you know, looking at it from Caleb's position, though, in perspective, I really hope that Vancouver utilizes him. Just because, you know, maybe if he was going to leave the academy system, the residency system, he would have been a free player and he had some options elsewhere. But he chose to sign professionally with the Whitecaps. So I don't know if that's the best option for him, but that was probably his goal from the get-go once he entered the residency program. So I don't know if it's the best move for him, but time will tell. And I think time will tell only if he gets the opportunity to play. Maybe Vancouver has some options out there that maybe they'll send him on loan, so he can get some playing time and really develop into the pro that he should be. So, it's a good thing for Canadian development and, again, for young players out there, continue to work hard and reap the benefits from that.
It would be complete speculation on my part, but I'm wondering if, you know, Martin Rennie is a big selling point at this point for players like that who might have multiple options and whatnot. It seems like, you know, they have a full roster, but players are still signing with Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Martin Rennie is Vancouver's best asset right now. His man management skills and his backroom staff there do quite well. So, I think if you're a player and you hear, you know, through a club, rumblings, talks go through a club, and if you're a young player, you hear that Martin Rennie is a player's coach and whatnot. So you want to play for a coach like that, and maybe he's trained. I'm sure Caleb Clark is trained with the club now that Martin Rennie's there. And he probably has a certain rapport with Martin. So I think that it is a good sign that Martin's there. And probably, as I said, the rumblings go through the club and throughout the residency program that, you know, through that those talks, that players will exactly and identify with that type of message that Martin Rennie has brought. So hopefully it'll continue to last for the Whitecaps.
Vancouver also announced on Tuesday that Richard Grootscholten, their residency technical director and head coach, will end his coaching responsibilities with the club on Friday, April 27th. It appears that the parting is amicable, but given Grootscholten's pedigree, my immediate thought was that it really is something of a loss for the organization. Chris, what are your thoughts on this news? And also, after having a German and a Dutchman as their last two residency directors, do you think Vancouver should be looking again towards Europe for Grootscholten's replacement?
Yes, Steve. I don't know what to make of that announcement. I mean, you mentioned there that it's an amicable decision and amicable feelings. I'm not sure if that's the case. I've been critical of the Whitecaps in the past with certain executives leaving the club and whatnot, but I just feel that that is a loss. I think whenever you have someone like that who's developed a rapport and implemented a system really there with the residency program and the youth players, no, for all of a sudden, for him to leave, and again with his pedigree and just implementing his culture, because that's what he's done. He's brought a culture there, and now they're going to have to start fresh. Unless, you know, maybe Steve, I mean, maybe I'm looking at it from the wrong perspective. Maybe they're going to implement a Canadian coach, a young Canadian coach that will come in and have his opportunity to put his stamp on the game and really have an impact, and it'll bode well for Canadian development, Canadian coaches, and Canadian players. So, I mean, maybe I'm looking at that at the wrong way, but I just think that it's almost a waste, you know, to have someone come in like that for that short period of time and then to leave again. But maybe he's done his job, and maybe they've just decided to part ways, as you said, amicably. So if that's the case, then for Richard Grootscholten, then hopefully, I hope he finds some place. I'm sure he will. He won't have a problem. But as far as the Whitecaps, hopefully they bring in someone to replace him with the same type pedigree and with the same success rates as Richard has had.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll hear more about it in the weeks to come, as well as more about about his replacement. You know, he is a foreigner, and as great as it is to live in Vancouver, as you know, it might just be there may be family issues or you know, a desire to go back to the Netherlands, or even you know a better job offer somewhere else. So we'll have to see what comes up next for both Groot Schulten. I thought we'd end off the podcast by discussing a young Canadian player who certainly deserves his fair share of plaudits and, you know, even more attention than I think he already gets. And that's a 21-year-old Brampton, Ontario native, Junior Hoilett. Hoilett scored a fantastic goal last Saturday in a key win for his team, English Premier League side Blackburn Rovers, who defeated Norwich City on the weekend. It was Hoilett's seventh goal in the EPL season. And, you know, the consensus is that the winger has been by far Blackburn's best player in their relegation battle to stay in the English top flight. So the question I have for you, Chris, is, you know, we all get to we get a lot of EPL coverage here in Canada, so a lot of Blackburn games on TV. Is Hoilett the best Canadian player in the world right now, or at least is he the Canadian who's in the most top form?
Well, he's the Canadian who's in the most top form right now. He's playing in the Premiership, and he's producing goals and assists. You know, he's making an impact, a definite impact, fighting for to stay in the top flight in English football. And I mean, that's the type of pressure that you want to have, that you probably, you know, as growing up, he's probably dreamed and lived that, you know, he's saving his team, and I think that he's doing it. He's doing his best, and I mean, what performance he's had in the last few matches, and really throughout the season. That's why he's being approached by all these big clubs. And I know you're probably going to get to another point, another question about Hoilett, but I just think that he's in top form, and just to watch him play, a player playing with confidence is amazing to see. You know, right now it doesn't look like a defender can stop him or a goal post or a goalkeeper. I mean, right now he looks unstoppable. So a player who's in definite form, and I hope that he does play for Canada. So, I'm looking forward to that decision as well.
Yeah, as you and I both know, and probably, you know, the majority of the people that listen to this podcast are aware, Hoilett can play for Canada and Jamaica. He's eligible for both countries, and he's not committed his international future yet. He's being quite coy. It doesn't look like he'll be playing for Canada in the next round, and maybe he's watching that round to see how Canada does, if he would make himself available for the Hex. You know, putting that aside for a second, you know, he's a young guy, a young talented kid, you know, who's from Brampton, Ontario, from the GTA. How big an inspiration is it for young Canadian soccer players to put on the TV and, you know, see a player who grew up in the same place as them and had the same, you know, coaching opportunities and playing opportunities, that he's playing on the biggest stage against the Man Uniteds of the world and Arsenals of the world, and he's excelling. How much of an inspiration is that for young Canadian players, or at least how much of an inspiration should it be?
Oh, it should be a huge inspiration. I mean, growing up, we didn't have the digital era that we have now with the internet when I was growing up, but, you know, watching players on TV, it inspired you, definitely. And when you have a player like that that's grown up, you know, in your hometown, your country, it's a definite inspiration. And, I mean, you look to the Guzmans, the Rosarios, you know, to players like that that have made an impact in football worldwide. And, I mean, Hoilett is a definite inspiration. I keep saying it, but he is Canada's top player right now in form. And players should look to him. I mean, what a player, what performance he's showing game in, game out, and that consistency. Players should look to him and really look to emulate the type of player that he is.
We've all been watching Canada's performances closely over the last couple of years. And, you know, how big a difference would a player of Hoilett's talent make to Canada's chances to qualify for Brazil 2014?
Yeah, again, that's just a question of depth. I mean, you add him to the squad, then your team becomes stronger. The team culture becomes better, just becomes more ingrained and more consistent. And you employ a winning mentality because he's played at a level where he has to win game in, game out. He's dealt with pressure situations. And you want those types of players within a Canadian national team that are going to have to go into CONCACAF regions and fight and play and produce goals and really, you know, keep goals from going into our net, because that pressure, there's nothing like it, Steve, you know, in a qualifying round where you
need to win. You need to get a point down in Honduras, down in El Salvador, and you know, you don't have players that can do that. So you need the Hoylets, you need the Jonathan de Guzman to come in and make an impact, and hopefully we can have those players down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like nothing less than to see Hoylett wearing a Canada kit and bringing some of that magic to the Canadian team. As I said, he's had oft-repeated statements, you know, pretty much every time he's asked about international football, that says he's in a holding pattern right now. He wants to sign his big contract, with his contract being up at the end of this season, and sort of, you know, get everything sorted out at the club level and contract-wise before he takes any chances playing international soccer. Some people consider that him being evasive on his part, and it's not what Canadian soccer fans, you know, have wanted to hear. But I'm wondering, do you think at least that approach is smart on the part of Junior and his family, especially given that this next contract is probably going to be, you know, with the amount of money that it's going to set him and his family up for life?
Yeah, I think what it will do is it will, how can I say this? His loyalty to Canada will really show when he decides to play for Canada, or if he decides to play for Canada, just because his future will be settled. He'll feel much more settled in his, you know, mental state, and obviously in his financial state as well. So from that standpoint, you know, he should go and play for the country that he really feels and where he calls home. And hopefully for us, for the Canadians, hopefully that's for us, you know, for the Maple Leafs. So I hope Hoylett makes that choice and that decision. If he doesn't, I know people, some fans will be angry and bitter, but I won't. I'll still look at him in the English EPL or, you know, any league that he decides to play in the next few years, and I'll still look at him as a Canadian and inspiring young Canadians to go after their dreams. So, yeah, I hope that he plays for Canada, because it will give Canada a fighting chance, because we're going to need all the help we can get going into the next qualifying stage. And if we can actually get to, as you said, the hex. So hopefully we can get there and get there with him.
Okay, well, another story to watch, Junior Hoylett. You know, we'll see with the relegation, and hopefully a new contract, and then hopefully, you know, playing for Canada. But that's all for this week on the North of 49 podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks again for providing all of your insight and wisdom, Chris.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. We'll be back next week with, you know, another breakdown of the happenings in Canadian soccer and another interesting guest. See you then.